time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
New and improved here on Coastal Daybreak. Well, at least with me, I don't know about
good
you.
Good morning, Lockwood.
Wes and Cecil, good morning to you all.
Good morning.
You know, when we come in the studio and we see that you're here, Lockwood, we know we're in for a bit of a ride, but it's always a great pleasure to be with you, Lockwood.
Thank you very much. You're kind. Yes. Let's hope the audience feels the same way.
Oh, they do. They do, I'm sure.
All right. What's on tap today?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the changes that took place in 2013 with regard to jurisdictional limits in small claims court, district court, and superior court. The General Assembly had been considering that for years, adjusting the jurisdictional limits, which had been years ago $3,000 at the magistrate court or small claims mm-hmm. court level, and then went up to five. And now that's been moved up to $10,000. So that's a pretty significant, you know, difference with regard to the jurisdiction that that magistrate court, you know, has. And then the district court level is basically up to 25, and then over that would be your typical superior court, when previously anything, you know, in excess of the 10 basically would be your superior court.
You know, that does lead me to the observation that the concept of inflation has kicked in, where we used to think that small claims was $2,500, anything
right.
and anything beyond that was a major or a larger claim.
Right.
Now it's $10,000 for small claims?
Yeah,
that's
right. And, you know, I think another one of the issues that was considered by the General Assembly was access to the courts and access to the law. You know, there's kind of a push throughout a lot of states, including North Carolina, with regard to folks not really having equal access to the courts because of the expense associated with it. It's expensive to deal with civil litigation in many contexts, in many situations. But small claims court really is the court of the people. It's like your people's court, your Judge Judy, that type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it is designed to deal with cases that can be litigated, you know, without an attorney. The rules of evidence are relaxed. A magistrate hears the case. There is no jury involved in that.
And
you know, maybe 10 to 25% of those cases there is an attorney involved in those, because sometimes you get into things that maybe are a little bit more complicated. But if it's your standard summary ejectment, which is basically an eviction, without, you know, too much to do other than that, then, you know, magistrate court has original jurisdiction over that, you know, and hears that usually without attorneys involved.
So Lockwood, what basically to back up a bit and explain a little bit more, I mean, the magistrate court is a court that you are able to go to the clerk of court's office, you're able to find certain forms. You fill out these forms and set forth what you, just as a layperson, deem to be the way in which you were damaged by the defendant. It doesn't have to have all the legal mumbo-jumbo boilerplate that we lawyers get so accused of adding to our documents, okay? It's a very simple form. You fill it out as best you can, because you know that once you get before the magistrate, there is going to be some leniency, if you will, some tolerance for the fact that you are in that court without a lawyer, without legal representation, that your matter does not exceed, you know, now this $10,000 threshold.
It's just $10,000 is interesting because we're, even in spite of inflation, $10,000 is a lot of money. And
right.
I would strike me as would you find you said earlier that you can bring an attorney to a small claims case?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yep. You can have representation. Of course you can. And And Ben, you know, there is some strategy now that lawyers are applying, because we need to talk about the fact that, you know, once you go through a magistrate, a small claims court, proceeding, if the judgment is against is not in your favor,
right,
you have the right to appeal that and start anew, which is known as a de novo appeal. And so the magistrate court hearing can in many ways, or the proceeding in many ways, can be kind of a discovery opportunity for lawyers to know more exactly what the evidence might be, what the contentions of the complaining party are. And to some degree, in some cases, can be used kind of as a discovery method.
Okay. And by the way, if anybody's interested in asking a question, because this is down right in the element of our audience, if you're
right,
interested,
sure,
with People's Court, you mentioned that a moment ago.
Sure.
800-818-2255. You're welcome to call in, or if you want to, in the 910 area code 353-4674 and 252 area code 247-7282. I got to get those last digits out. We've got Cecil Harvell, Wes Collins here with Let's Talk Legal. This whole issue, and I won't belabor this, but if you go to the an appeals process, where do you take it from basically magistrate's court to? What do you appeal it to magistrate's court, or what's the next level?
It's a great question. Most appeals are basically, they go up to our actual court of appeals in the state of North Carolina.
Really?
If we're going from district court or we're going from superior court, then that goes to Raleigh, basically, from those trial court levels to be reviewed by our North Carolina Court of Appeals. However, magistrate court is appealed to the district court. So, you know, your jurisdictional level being at $10,000, and then the next level being, you know, district courts used to deal with those type cases as well. And, you know, a small part of what the district court's docket is actually appeals from the magistrate court. So,
okay.
I mean, they're somewhat used to dealing, you know, with those appeals. But that is where that appeal goes to. And the term de novo is interesting, because, and it deserves a little bit of explanation, because it's not as though the district court is reviewing what the magistrate court did. It's not like we're sending the record up to the district court and saying, okay, this is what the magistrate court did. We're appealing it because they made a mistake. No, we start clean. We start fresh. We start anew. We start de novo. With a brand new case, basically, in district court, putting on all your evidence again in district court.
And that's where that comes in with the discovery that you're talking about.
Correct, because, right, you know, some people will take the position, well, you know, have absolutely nothing to lose,
right,
by going through this magistrate court proceeding,
mm-hmm,
because if the recovery is not completely in my favor, I'll just start again. At the
wow,
at the other level. So
file my notice of appeal within,
yep,
10 days. It's a short period of time. You have to file it within 10 days.
Mm-hmm. But, all right, we've got a caller standing by. Let's go to Walter in Alliance. And Walter, good morning, and welcome to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell in West Collins. Yes, sir.
Well, welcome to the morning, Flockwood.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
When a plaintiff has been awarded a judgment against a defendant, in terms of, say, an eviction or order to pay back rent, what recourse does a plaintiff have against the defendant if they don't perform that judgment?
All right. Let me go to the
great question. All right. So a judgment is basically a piece of paper that says someone owes you some money,
mm-hmm,
but it has the force of law behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But defendants who have judgments against them are not required, you know, to pay those. They don't have to just pay that judgment because the court says you owe the money, unless they run into a situation like if they're trying to buy a home, they're trying to get some type of financing, something like that, that requires them to get that off of their record first. Mm-hmm. So that, let's say, the bank would have a first lien position. So if you get your judgment and you just sit back and wait for it to get paid, you might be sitting back and waiting for a long period of time, maybe, depending on the circumstances.
Well, this is what's happening.
Okay. Wait, did you say that again? Yeah. Go ahead. Say that again, Walter.
That's what's happening.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I knew that from your question. So, all right. So what you do is there's a whole body of law with regard to execution on the judgment. And there's a process that you go through where there's a notice of rights to claim exemptions that has to be served upon the debtor, upon the defendant that you have the judgment against. That gives them a 20-day period of time to exempt certain property from your judgment. It's very limited in what they could exempt, but that's all set forth and defined in the North Carolina General Statutes. So then once that is done, then you basically can have what's called a writ of execution issued by the court, which is served and executed on by the Sheriff's Department. So if we find assets such as a vehicle that doesn't have, you know, debt on it, that has some equity maybe, or we have personal property, or we have, you know, just things, anything that can be taken to satisfy the judgment, then as long as it's not exempted, you know, on that notice of right to claim exemptions, then the sheriff can pick those items up, have them sold, and give you the money. I mean, that's a process that we go through. The easiest way, you know, to get, it depends on kind of how much the judgment is, too. If we're talking about a minimal judgment, then, and we are talking about a renter here, so it may be that the likelihood that they own some real property, real estate, isn't all that high. But one thing that you would want to look at would be to look at the tax records and see if you can find any property in this individual's name. And if you do find property in the individual's name, then, you know, you can proceed with this execution process to require their property to be sold to satisfy your judgment. So,
is there statute of limitations on that?
10 years. Your judgment's good for 10 years.
Okay.
Yep. So, you know, a lot of our practice really ends up being not just, you know, when you get a judgment against someone in a case like this, it's not just getting the judgment, it's also executing on the judgment. So,
right.
I mean,
and one other thing that just comes to mind, Walter, is that, you know, a judgment is really just a stage in the proceeding. It's not, I think what Wes is saying, which is very accurate, is that, you know, it's not really a sense of finality.
Gotcha.
I mean, people can have judgments against them for 10 years, as we've said, and then the judgment can, by the way, can also be renewed very easily, quite frankly. But what I'm getting at here is that you can negotiate a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Many times, in a larger case, in a larger lawsuit, there will be a judgment against the defendant, let's say, for a larger amount of money. The defendant will come forward and say, well, you know that I'm not going to be able to pay all of the judgment, but I will pay you X number of dollars if you will mark the judgment paid and satisfied, or I will give you this piece of property that is worth less than the judgment, but if you'll take it and mark the judgment paid and satisfied. So having a judgment is just, Lockwood, yet one more stage of a litigation matter.
Walter?
Great, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for the call.
Walter.
Appreciate that. After this break, I'm curious, what impact just the fact that there's a judgment on your record? I'm going to ask you that question.
Sure.
With Let's Talk Legal, we've got Cecil Harvell and Les Collins. And by the way, if you'd like to join in, you're welcome to call us 800-818-2255. Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. New and improved. Well, at least I'm claiming new and improved. There's nobody else to complain right now. Hit Lockwood behind the mic, starting with the new summer lineup. We have, of course, Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell here in the studio with Let's Talk Legal. I just want to remind everyone, if you'd like to call them for further discussion and explanation, 252 area code 726-9050, 9050. Mm-hmm. And, of course, podcasting
Wes,
these programs.
Wes will talk will add some other elements to your question, Lockwood. But if you have a judgment against you, clearly one of the issues is that it's going to affect your credit rating. I mean, Equifax and the other credit reporting.
Just the fact that it's sitting on my record.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, they'll discover that, and that will then affect the public record, because a judgment is public record, and those guys search the public records in order to keep their credit ratings. Secondly, if you own real property,
mm-hmm.
okay, then the judgment can attaches by operation of law, if you will, to any holding of real property that you have. Now, if it's a property that you own with your wife, tenants by entirety property, and the judgment is just against you as the husband or just against the wife, then it's not going to attach to the joint property. But if you own property singularly, just in your name, not in an LLC, not in a corporation, you just own property and you have a judgment, then if you go to sell that property, or you go to put a mortgage on that property or refinance that property, then this judgment is going to be found in the public records again when we lawyers do our title searches, mm-hmm. and you are going to have to deal with that judgment. In other words, you know, satisfy it, pay it off, compromise it, get a title company to give someone insurance notwithstanding it, whatever the case might be.
All right, and just to recap, we're talking about an issue magistrate's court, which I discovered this morning, has been used the term jurisdictional increase to $10,000.
Right.
A lot of people thought it was five, and some people even remember back when it was $2,500.
Right, right. So, and that's really opened up that magistrate court to just a lot more matters that can be considered because, you know, you can get there real fast. You don't do a lot of discovery. You don't have to spend a lot of money dealing with getting there. You can handle it yourself. You know, even if you have a case that's even $12,000, $15,000, $18,000, you might just decide, hey, I'm going to go to magistrate court. I know 10 is my best day in court, but let me go ahead and proceed with this quick remedy. And it could be a situation like Walter called about just a moment ago. I don't know if I can collect out of this guy anyway, I want to go ahead and get my judgment.
This is an individual who has not paid his rent. And I assume we didn't ask if he's been evicted, but he's probably been evicted. But Walter would like to get his compensation for the rent.
Right.
You bring up another interesting observation. Okay, so the outstanding debt is $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize I would like a quick, what was the term?
Remedy.
Remedy.
Yep.
I can just lower it and say I want $10,000.
That's all the magistrate court can give you is the 10, or you can decide just to get summary ejectment and not seek a judgment against him. Then you would have a separate action in district court for the 15. But if you proceed in small claims court, and get your judgment for 10 to try to get the money as well, then that's res judicata. That means the thing is resolved, and you can't then proceed to try to get more in another court. You can't go sue for the extra five.
My next question.
You can make up your mind about that. But, you know, really, Lockwood, you know, you really have to go to small claims court to get your order of summary ejectment. And while you're there, might as well tell the court how much rent is owed in arrears. And might as well go ahead and get your judgment too, because you're already there. You know, so a lot of times, you know, it's not that much more work to just, you know, put on what evidence you need to in order to get your judgment amount as well, back rent.
All right, we'll take a quick break here with Les Collins and Cecil Harvell. Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station. We have a few minutes left. If you'd like to call in, 800-818-2255, locally in the 910 area code 353-4674, 252 area code 247-7282. Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 AM 1240. We're talking Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And we're wrapping things up here this afternoon. I did it this morning. I'm so used to you're sitting in front of the microphone at a particular time of day, and you just sort of go into that, that standard.
This larger limit, Lockwood, is really useful for the business community, you know, folks that have account receivables. You know, there's so many, you know, professionals, if you will. I mean, doctors, lawyers, dentists, engineers, physical therapists, the list is endless, that have open accounts that need to somehow get settled. I know that, in your business, the News Times, I know we always have an account with you, and we, of course, pay our bill, thank goodness.
Thank you very much.
But I'm sure that any business that has an open account, this is real beneficial to them to be able to go in and seek some recovery, and the $10,000 limit being increased really helps local businesses.
Does it also relieve some of the pressure from the district court perspective?
Well, the district court is very busy with misdemeanor criminal and family law.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say the district court probably doesn't feel much of a difference here as it relates to
really?
The jurisdictional change, because such a small amount of what the district court does is civil, collections type work. So I would say it probably doesn't affect it very much.
All right. And, with a change from 10 to 25,000, so district court doesn't see a lot of those.
But they're still dealing with those appeals, the appeal de novos.
That's right.
So the cases end up there anyway.
So if I'm dissatisfied with the conclusion of my magistrate court decision,
right.
My next appeal is to the district court.
Yep. File a notice of appeal and pay the cost within 10 days.
And it begins all over again, but I don't take my complaint or how I felt that the magistrate handled it to the district.
No. Put on your evidence before the district court, and it's a brand new case.
All right. Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell. By the way, the website, please.
HarvellandCollins.com.
And that phone number again?
726-9050.
To Wes Collins and to Cecil Harvell, thanks very much.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station FM 107 AM 1240.